Luck on Sunday, brought to you by Whirlpool. Bet with the world.
Welcome to the Luck on Sunday podcast, a weekly audio digest of all the best bits of Luck on Sunday, free to air every Sunday from 9 o'clock, that brings you the best guests and insight from around the racing world. And we'll be talking to Pat Gallagher, the owner of McDermott, and the rider Danny Mullins. His part, he played a crucial one yesterday. That's all for later. This is for now, as Neil Channing just about made it alongside my guest Dom French Davis and Kieran Schumacher this morning. We were worried for a moment we were going to have to bring you in, you know, a little bit later. Like, as you arrive at the theatre a bit too late, we have to let you in after the first act.
I'm like one of the comedy runners that brings up the rear, aren't I, really, in my, you know, in my banana suit or whatever. I got to London Bridge, there were marathon runners everywhere. I think they assumed that I was going somewhere else, but I got here anyway.
OK, no Che Guevara today. We got Blondie's Parallel Lines.
Very much so, yes.
Excellent. Possibly a metaphor for this programme, I shouldn't wonder. Right, Dominic French-Davis. As I said, good start to the season. Things changing. You in good form?
Great form. The horses are well. I'm looking forward to it.
And Kieran, for you, it's trials week. And the one thing you know about being a jockey to John and Thady Gosden is that this is trials week. It's not the real thing. Does that reassure you somewhat?
For sure. And I think naturally for a jockey, we're obviously fierce competitors, so you want to go out there and win every race. But what John and Thady have just instilled in me, that's the bigger picture. You know, John was telling me the other morning when I was riding out that 2 years ago, over the 5 days, the 3 days in Newmarket and the 2 days in Newbury, I think they had 12 winners. Mm-hmm. Last year, they were one from 19, a filly one called Covey. Soul Sister finished last and the Fred Darling went on and won the Oaks. So it's not the be-all end all. There's a, you know, the bigger picture and they've got to sustain and, you know, progress throughout the year. So it's reassuring.
But you are now fully in situ as first jockey at Clarehaven, and you effectively had this sort of hanging over you for quite a bit of last season, uncertainty about what Frankie Dettori was going to do, and everyone seemed to know that you had the job, but it didn't go public for a long time. How did you sort of keep yourself together through that period?
Oh, it was fine. So I was riding out in John and Thady's for maybe since Royal Ascot time. Obviously, I was still associated with Charlie Hills. I suppose it got a little bit messy because there was rumours flying around everywhere and you know, Charlie Hills probably wasn't, you know, he was kept in the dark a little bit, so possibly wasn't, it was difficult for him, but so I was a little bit in limbo, but...
And you couldn't say too much to too many people, I guess, that's the other thing.
No, absolutely. So we weren't 100% sure what Frankie was doing at the same time, but I just had to sit tight, and last year was a little bit difficult, but hopefully we can reap the rewards this year.
And of course, you want to know that there's the job there waiting for you, or a job of some sort waiting for you, because, you know, you're not putting all your eggs in one basket, but you're putting quite a lot of eggs in a very important basket, and you don't want to kind of cut all your ties everywhere.
Of course, you know, but, you know, hopefully I can just settle into the job now, and I look forward to it.
So your association with the Gosdens actually goes back quite a long way, doesn't it? That's what I hadn't really realised prior to last year.
Yeah, so when I was 15, in my summer holidays at school, my last year at school, I went up for a week's holiday, and it was fantastic. I mean, it didn't end great because I was there for 3 days. I was there Monday, Tuesday, rode out, and then on the Wednesday, rode a bit of work. And I was really inexperienced.
So you're 15 at this point?
15, yeah. I did not, you know...
Did they know how old?
They did, but I really did not have much experience riding racehorses, but I rode a piece of work. I think I did a solo piece on the Alba Hathaway. And then on the Thursday, I was staying with my uncle, who lives in Ely, 20 minutes away from Newmarket.
This is Peter?
Peter, yes. Yeah. And he has a few horses back at his home. And there was a Shetland pony. So he has younger children. And he had this Shetland pony that was misbehaving, so his wife, Sarah, asked me to get up on it one evening, and it bucked me off and I broke my collarbone. So that cut my week's experience at Clarehaven short.
So you've probably been riding Raven's Pass, a piece of work, one day and then get bucked off a Shetland pony the next
day. Well, it was far from ideal, but... yeah, so I've known John for a long time, and, you know, I've always had the odd ride for him throughout my career. He was very supportive when I was going for the Champion Apprentice title. Mm-hmm. He threw me a few winners, and I'm forever grateful for that. But, yeah, so there's always been a bit of an association there.
How long is it now since that apprentice race?
Oh, God.
It feels like yesterday.
I'd imagine...
It's probably not.
It was probably six years ago, anyway. Mm. Yeah.
And a lot of ups and downs in the interim. You seem now to be pretty centred and pretty happy with life.
Yeah, my life's changed drastically, really, for the better, obviously. But, you know, I'm fully committed and concentrated on my career. I'm very happy in myself. I've got great people around me. I've always had great people around me. And, you know, I had my ups and downs, and... I don't regret anything, you know. I think it's made me the person I am today, and I look forward just to what the future has ahead of me, really.
Mm. You say that you don't regret anything. Is that sort of part of your personality anyway? You're not someone who's a big one for looking back.
Yes, but I think the way in which the experience I had with, you know, struggling with addiction, I think... to remain sober, and you've got to reflect at the same time, because you've got to remind yourself what life was like back then. So, but I'm very much one to look forward, and, you know, it was a difficult time in my life. It was a difficult time in my family's life and people closest to me, but, It's made me a stronger person, for sure.
And as far as I can tell, it's made you the sort of person that a lot of young people who are struggling in similar areas would want to come and talk to.
Oh, for sure.
Do you get that a lot?
Yes, I get it.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, I get that a lot. A lot of people make contact. And I always admire people that reach out and talk to me, because when I was going through these things, through this addiction, that was probably the hardest thing, to speak to people, because I always felt like I was bothering someone. Like, this was my problem, I'll deal with it. Although I wasn't dealing with it properly, I always find that was the hardest thing, to try and talk to someone. So I admire, if someone can reach out and talk to me, that is the biggest step. Like, that's almost them accepting they've got a problem. And you won't overcome this until you accept you've got a problem.
Mm. And did you have quite a lot of... You say you've always had good people around you. Who were the people that really put you on the right path, or at least helped you help yourself, which, of course, is what you've always got to do?
Yeah, so obviously my family. I was talking to my mum not too long ago about this, and she said she thinks she delayed me getting sober or getting better probably a year by trying to intervene too much. And I think she's probably unfair in saying that. It's definitely something that you need to realise yourself. Like, when I was going through all this, I probably went to between 70 and 100 AA meetings before I actually got sober. Like, I went to rehab for 28 days, and I needed that foundation. I need to be fully immersed in living with like-minded people for 24/7, you know, for 28 days. I needed that foundation. Just going to AA, and I was going to meetings, and I was going for other people to keep people off my back. And I was going to meetings and sitting at the back of the room and sitting there as quiet as a church mouse, not really engaging at all.
So you're paying lip service to the process, but you're not really helping yourself until you completely cut everything else out and focus on that.
No, completely. You have to accept it. You can't get better until you realise yourself. I remember I find it so easy now to reflect and think, how was I so naive? Obviously, when you're immersed and you're twisted and you're turned and you're going through all this, your brain's like a washing machine. You're not thinking clearly. But looking back now and, you know, just looking at my CV, my drinking caused problems. Mm. Surely that's a drinking problem. You know, I lost driving licenses. I lost friendships, relationships. Everything close to me was falling away from me. And then it wasn't until that night at Kempton when I tested positive that I remember getting back into my car. So I was stood down immediately and getting back into my car in the car park at Kempton and just feeling, sitting into my driver's seat and feeling the weight just come off my shoulders.
So you were relieved you'd been caught?
Relief, pure relief, the weight off my shoulders. And that was the day I knew I could concentrate on my recovery. I didn't have the pressures of riding. I think that happened on the Wednesday. I was in rehab by the Tuesday. And a big thank you to the PGA and Paul Struthers. Paul Struthers sorted everything, you know. So I was in rehab by the Tuesday, and that was the first day, really, I could sort of begin my new life.
And it's interesting when you say you look back at my CV and this, but of course, actually, if you look back on your CV and you strip that out and no one were to know about it, it would look like quite a normal arc of a jockey who's pretty successful, then has to dig a bit deeper for a bit, and then the curve goes up again. Yeah, it wouldn't look completely abnormal. It's very interesting that you see that period and what could have happened in that period. But you were to a greater or lesser extent functioning to the outside world. You were okay.
Sure, I was functioning. I had a bit of luck, really. I went to Roger Charlton's as a £3 claimer, and I'd just come back from Australia doing a stint in Australia. I went straight to Roger Charlton's, and George Baker was riding his first jockey at Beckhampton, and William Twiston Davis was second jockey to George. And I suppose, obviously, George had his career-ending fall. Then Willie Twiston Davis, maybe a couple of months later, retired from being a flat jockey. So I kind of slotted into a position by default, really, where I was riding a lot of these nice horses. I'd only been there a couple of months, and you know, Roger was having stacks of winners, and I mean, honestly, I would probably say Roger Charlton has been the biggest influence on my career to date. Not just professionally, but he was extremely patient with me.
Go on, just.
Obviously, when I tested positive, and I had a few people come up to me and say, when Jason, I was in rehab. I remember seeing it on the Racing Post on my phone that Jason Watson had just got the job at Roger Charlton's. And I got a few messages saying I thought that was a little bit unfair. And people don't realise Roger Charlton, you know, I didn't just have the one chance. He gave me 20, 30, 40 chances. You know, he was extremely patient, and he helped me a lot, like I said, professionally and personally.
Were you difficult, though, with it? Were you difficult to deal with?
Oh, no.
Through your addiction problems? Or was it just the fact that it was stopping you function at where you should have been?
No, I don't think I was difficult at all. I certainly wasn't the person I am today, but I was doing more harm to myself.
But clearly you were the sort of person that people would want to help.
I suppose so, and I hope so, because I've never, you know, I'm not a controversial person. I dislike confrontation. I'm, you know, a relatively quiet, keep myself to myself type person. And I hope that's a likeable trait. And I think people see that in me. And I was offered a lot of help by, you know, like I said, I've always had great people around me, and no one gave up on me, and especially my family anyway.
So if, as you come over, you are much more centred now and feel a sort of greater level of sort of social self-confidence, does that then communicate to what you're doing on the saddle and around the yard and on a day-to-day basis? Do you sort of feel more composed and comfortable and ready for this big opportunity?
Yeah, completely. My head is completely in the job. Like, I know the responsibility I have. I enjoy going racing. I enjoy riding good horses, as every jockey does. It's a different world I'm living in right now, and I'm completely aware of the magnitude of this opportunity I've been given, and it's an opportunity I'm certainly going to grab with both hands.
And where is your outlet now? Where is your release? Where is your fun, dare I say it?
Yeah, I'm not a particularly outgoing person. I was talking to my girlfriend about this last night, and she said, what if Nick asks you about what are your hobbies? And I was like, God, I honestly don't have many hobbies. I said, I'm a bit of a foodie, and, you know, I like going out for nice food and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm a bit of a phase man too. I still have those addictive personality traits and obsessive behaviours, but I just try now to channel it in the right way. And, you know, they're relatively healthy, obsessive behaviours, but I just have to try and channel it in the right way.
He's a pretty impressive guy, Dom, isn't he?
He is, yeah. And my son Ben had similar problems, and he was very helpful to him. He appreciated it at no end, you know. And as you say, you do replace those addictions with other things. My son loves his food as well. Nothing better than cooking, going out to eat and everything else. Yeah. Mm.
And how's Ben doing now?
Great, yeah, he's out in America. Not so great for his parents, because we were watching six races from Middleburg last night, and he hit the deck in two of them, having hit the deck the week before as well.
It's not very forgiving surface there either, is
it? It's not. It's very fast ground. And falls hurt out there, yeah.
But in himself, he's doing well, thanks to Kieran and others.
Yeah, definitely. And Sporting Chance, PJA, all fantastically helpful.
And tell me a little bit about the French Davis family, how you're all doing now with a new chapter in your lives, I suppose.
Yeah, I think we're doing well. We're enjoying it a bit more. Training is a struggle, as everyone knows. And, you know, when you have good horses to run for you, life is a lot better.
So tell me how all this has come about, because you were training for a number of years with some success. You had some good winners, some nice horses, punching above your weight, but not numerically strong. And then suddenly everything changes. So how did it all happen?
By chance. As you say, you know, we struggled along for many years. We had the odd good horse. When I first started, I'd always go out and buy a few yearlings on spec and sell them on, and luckily enough, I'd turn up one or two decent ones from them, but always with, you know, small money. And then things sort of, and probably to do with the economy, I felt I couldn't go out and buy those. Mm-hmm. So I went through a period of time where, you know, you struggle to get a good horse. And then suddenly I actually was given the opportunity to buy one or two before AMA Racing came along. And we struck gold with a couple of them. And things were starting to look up anyway. But then, fortunately for me, Kia rented the yard next door to me and needed a... I'm not sure whether he was initially going to train from there, whether it was going to be a pre-training yard or whatever, but then he decided he wanted to run horses from there and needed a trainer to oversee it.
And there you were, in situ, on the doorstep.
Yeah.
And Kia's got his own team that he had already put in there. So how does the dynamic work between you all?
I think it works well. I'm a very good team. We've got some fantastic, great staff there, very knowledgeable, good riders. Rafael Ferrer, he does the day-to-day running of the yard, and he's a very good horseman. Most of the horses are pre-trained in Ireland by Rob Sanagua, who does a fantastic job. And you know, when the 2-year-olds arrive to us, they know their job when they get there.
And what do you feel that you then add on top?
Perhaps it's just a little bit of experience. you know, I know the race courses in this country, the race programme. That's probably my biggest input into the operation.
So actually just the kind of coordination, really, who yeah. runs where and what and how, and trying to assess what's suitable for each, particularly the two-year-olds, I'd have thought, trying to sort between them all must be quite an interesting and new challenge.
Yeah, you know, everyone loves to have a blank canvas, and it's exciting when you've got nice pedigrees to work with and nice individuals to work with. You know, when they arrive from Marlins, it's exciting to see what we've got and see where we're going to go with them.
And how much has the new life or the new regime changed your lifestyle?
I'm on the road a little bit more often, racing probably at least 6 days a week or 5 or 6 days a week. As regards lifestyle, not hugely, but I'm going to the race to run in a group race some days, whereas I've been running in the low-grade handicap before. You know.
But I guess now you're doing what, when you were, I don't know, in your late teens, early 20s, you imagined you probably would be doing, because that's what everyone's dreaming of at that point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I always thought I'd have my training would come to the fore and I'd have nice horses. It doesn't always happen. You when you set out to be a trainer, you think you're going to be dining at the top table all the time, and you don't often. It doesn't always happen.
And who set you along the right path, Don?
I don't know. I started with Paul Cole when I came over from Ireland in 1983, and we had a great team of staff there. And some lovely horses. Fahd Salman was the main owner. Anthony Penfold used to buy the horses and bought really nice horses. I think Paul Cole's operation was very regimented, and there were some superb staff there, from the head lads to the, you know, right down through the paid lads and the work riders. And so it's a very good grounding. And we had good horses. I used to break all the horses in when I first started. And, you know, there were Group 1 winners all the way through, from Knights, Baroness, Snurge, Ibn Bay, Generous. Generous was the last one I broke in before moving on to David Ellsworth, where he was, where we had some very good horses there as well.
Mm. Did you get to David Ellsworth after the In the Grooves of this world, or was she still?
No, In the Groove was a 2-year-old when I arrived, I was there for her career.
Of course, you managed to get in and out of these legendary yards just at the right time, didn't you?
I was very lucky because I broke Generous in and then left.
Yeah.
To go to work for David Ellsworth, and then we had Dead Certain and In the Groove that year, and I. When Generous started winning everything before him, I thought, oh, I've missed out on him. But luckily enough, the good horses were at Elsie's as well.
Right, you break a horse in like Generous. Do you know straight away that he's got it?
He was. People asked me at the time. I didn't. He was a smashing horse, good mover. He was quite a big yearling, and he didn't actually grow a huge amount. But a lovely mover. And I remember there was a yardman at the time who was very hot in his pedigrees. And he said to me, "He said, oh, well, that's got a fantastic pedigree, that, you know." And you know, I'd looked at him as an ordinary yearling, but you know, one of the nicer ones.
Mm. And then, you know, when you were at David Ellsworth and Paul Cole, I can't think of two people who are more different as characters. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
They were different. Yeah, they're very, very different. It was out of the frying pan into the fire, but. You know, that they ran a very good ship. Elsie was very much more on instinct as a trainer. He was a natural horseman and had a fantastic eye, or still does have a fantastic eye for a horse. And he would spot things that other trainers wouldn't spot about horses. Whereas Paul ran a very tight ship and had great staff and nice horses to work with as well.
And great discipline, I guess. Hence those, you know, when he had 3 or 4 Ascot 2-year-olds in a season, that sort of thing. So he knew how to get one fired up.
Oh, very much so. Our 2-year-olds would win first time out generally in the early part of the season. He was very much a trainer that got his 2-year-olds going early.
Did you, come across any of the jumpers when you were at Elsie's?
Yeah, I was there for the latter part of Desert Orchid's career, Barnbrook again. But Elsie was sort of winding down the jumping then. And I think when Desi retired and Barnbrook again went, I think he felt that, and I think he fell out of love with the jumping, because the number of injuries and things, and we were getting more and more flat horses, and we got up to about 100 flat horses that season. So.
Do you still enjoy the jumping?
I love it. Yeah, my son rides over jumps, and I always have sort of tried to keep one or two just to help his career along. And I do, yeah, I do love the jumping, but injuries, you know, I had about 3 jumpers this year and 2 out of the 3 got legs.
And really, I mean, if we're talking about pedigrees, Kieran, you ought to be a jump jockey.
Sure, yeah, my father was a jump jockey.
Brother's a jump jockey, yeah. Father was a jump jockey, uncle was a jump jockey, grandfather was a jump jockey.
Yeah, it was in
my
blood.
Yeah.
For sure, so luckily I stayed small enough. And I probably always, you know, growing up in the Cotswolds, very much jumping, kind of HQ around there, Jonjo O'Neill, Nigel Tyson Davis. I went to school, you know, I went to the Cotswold school with the Twiston boys and, you know, so I probably did want to, I grew up probably wanted to be a jump jockey, but I think a few wise people told me when I was probably 15, 16 that it made sense for me to start on the flat.
And actually, was going all the way back then, was that initial Gosden experience? Those 3 days and...
Yes, yeah, yeah. So I went to...
Was it already sort of Peter and others saying this might be the way forward?
Sure. So I did my work experience in my final year of school at a pre-training yard owned by a man called David Thorpe, mm-hmm. and also another man called Dawson Lees that run the yard. He was an apprentice jockey for Barry Hills many years ago, and he was the one that told me that I need to go down the flat route, and that's when it stemmed from there. And obviously I did that week in Clare Haven, and I started riding out a little bit on my weekends for Richard Phillips in Adelstrop, and so then went to the racing school and then started at Kingsclere, Andrew Balding.
I mean, Richard Phillips is a good fun place to start, I would think.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and he often texts me, and I still haven't ridden him a winner, which he keeps reminding me.
But he's not the sort of person he'd ever forget, is he, that you were there?
he's just a great character, good trainer, good person overall, you know. I'm very fond of Richard.
And that, you sort of still got in just when the kind of Kingsclere Academy was in full swing, didn't you?
Yeah, so I went from the racing school to Kingsclere, and I was there at the time, Usheen Murphy, Rob Hornby, Tom Brown, Dan Muscat, Joey Haynes. There was a big, big team of us, and it was healthy competition.
How on earth did they keep all that under control?
Well, yeah, it was... it's a bit like, you know, someone finishes school and goes off to university, yeah, living in dormitories. You know, I left school, went to Kingsclere, lived in a hostel with 10, 15 lads of a similar age. And, you know, quite often, actually, because there's a lot of Kingsclere graduates in the weighing room, and often stories get retold, and some that I probably can't share on Sunday morning TV, because there was a line and often we crossed it. But I had a great time. I was there for 3 years, and I wouldn't change that grounding, you know. I was probably there for a year before I got my licence, and just being like riding work with those fellow apprentices, and the, you know, it's the most incredible place, the grass gallops, like such demanding gallops. You learned how to judge pace, and everyone wanted to be better than each other. So it was a brilliant environment.
Who was it from that venture came on the show, said that, you know, Usheen Murphy was always different. He was always going to be something. Yeah, so he was either going to be there or there.
Yeah, he came. I think Rob Hornby was there a month.
It was Rob Hornby on the show.
He arrived.
So you knew he was going to be different.
Sure. Rob arrived a month before I did. Usheen probably a month after I did. But he had so much experience. Like, he had been riding work in Ballydoyle. He might have ridden 100 pony race winners in Ireland. He was, you know, myself and Rob were very wet behind the ears. We were going there to learn our trade, whereas Oisin was a few steps ahead.
You were nice boys.
Relatively.
It is a huge advantage of this pony racing, isn't it? And I think since the pony racing's got a bit bigger in this country, the jockeys have come through. We don't get as many Irish jockeys as we did 20 years ago.
I think it is a big advantage early on, but you know, as time goes on, you'll catch them up. You know?
Yeah.
And just in terms of where all their careers have gone, you must actually feel a sense of pride that so many of you have kind of elevated to a pretty high level, riding Group One winners and whatnot.
Sure, and I suppose I have to give credit to Andrew Balding, really. You know, it was an academy of... It's quite a responsibility for them looking after so many young staff, and they have such fantastic facilities there. Like I said, we lived in the hostel. They had an in-house cook. We were very well looked after. So, you know, we had a very good grounding, and credit to them to sort of, you know, school us up to the position we're in now.
Dom, you were nodding away when Neil was talking about the weather and the impact that has on being able to train these horses.
Yeah, I think it's hugely significant. A lot of the southern trainers' horses seem to be further forward than the northern trainers, although Richard Fahey won the Nell Gwyn. So she may come on when the sun comes out up north. But I felt the second horse at Newmarket...
Dance Sequence.
I think she'll come on a lot for a run. She got into a bit of a pocket in the race, then quickened up and was having to quicken up into the dip. Mm. Got a little bit unbalanced, and when she met the rising ground, she ran on really well to the line.
Yeah.
So a step up to the mile for her, and with the race under her belt, I think she'll take a bit of beating.
Well, clearly, Richard Hannon, in the positively tropical surrounds of the Hampshire-Wiltshire borders, is getting these horses further forward, where they're certainly running extremely well. And he's got Rosalian to unleash, of course, in the Guineas. He won the trial, the big trial, the Craven Stakes, with Heart M this week, completing a fine week for Sean Levy, who'd struck earlier in the week in the Field and Stakes on the talented horse JRB, trained by Brian Meehan. And Sean, I think, can join us now. Sean, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Morning, everyone. How are we all?
That, I think, goes down as a week well done, doesn't it? What aspect of it delighted you, thrilled you, surprised you the most?
Look, it was nice to see all our horses in good form. We had some nice horses win some nice races. I think, well, obviously, I think everyone's question is where our team stood as far as Rosalian was concerned, and to see our team win the Craven, let's just say, put us in a good place.
Now, Heart M didn't just win the Craven, he absolutely bolted up. The man who rode the runner-up is sitting to my right. To what extent do you think, Sean, you just had a massive edge in terms of readiness? And to what extent do you think this horse has really taken a big step forward from his two-year-old days?
He's no doubt taken a step forward. He was a big horse last year, this one would improve. He definitely has done... you know, going the mile on that track would have definitely suited as well, because we did fancy him a little bit when he ran in the Dewhurst, albeit he was in very good company on that day. And look, there's a big question mark on what he, you know, ran against on the day. But that said, I think, you know, he won it decisively, and he gave me a very good feel anyway doing so. So, no, I was very happy with that result.
I'm going to bring the man who rode the runner-up in quickly, Sean, because he's on my right here. Kieran, you were well in the wake of Heart M. Eben Shaddad had a hood on. John Gosden said he might take it off next time. Did it becalm him a little bit?
Yeah, I think he fell asleep a little bit. He's been a bit headstrong in his work the last few months, so we decided to put a hood on him. And I think it switched him off a little bit too much. When I asked him to quicken, he took a bit of waking up. It's, you know, he's by Calix. I suppose there's a little bit of a question mark whether he definitely stayed the mile well, but we'll see. But the hood will be off.
But, Sean, your horse did see the mile out well. Do you see him as the sort of horse who
like he was as a two-year-old, he can just keep running. He can just turn up to every gig. He seems very tough.
100%. I think, you know, he didn't miss a dance last year. And that stood to him, I think, this time around. He's matured very well through the winter. He's got a very good mindset. And, you know, with all those attributes, you don't see why he can't just keep turning up now at this stage. He's grown into himself, and he's definitely a, you know, a solid horse. I personally thought he'd stay a little bit further. So I think he's got plenty of options.
Would Rosalien spank Hartem with the same emphasis that City of Troy did last year?
Nick, I think the biggest thing is they all have different styles of running. I think what makes Rosalien better than Hatim is the fact that he's a faster horse, you know? But what makes it difficult taking on City of Troy is that he's got a hell of a lot of stamina, as well as having the speed to go with it. So, you know, it's a difficult one to say. I think depending on the trip, I think you could probably change the result if they were to work together.
So when you think about, as you will do, when you think about, right, how does Rosalien in my ideal universe beat City of Troy, do you envisage Rosalien beating City of Troy through pure pace, through a turn of foot?
I think ultimately you'd have to take that into consideration, because I think Rosalien potentially has... can throw in a quicker sectional time than City of Troy. But City of Troy is quite difficult because he sets a high standard of fractions for, you know, a long, long way. And he's very straightforward, and he's proven that he goes on all sorts of ground. So, you know, it's very difficult to take off like that when your attributes are mostly speed.
Mm. And you know full well exactly how horses are prepared at Ballydoyle, because you were a big part of that operation for a long time. And the reason why Aidan O'Brien is 18 in Newmarket Classics, because he has them to a level that most horses aren't at that relative stage of their career. It seems as though, of British trainers, you're in the camp that can do it best. Richard Hannan clearly has a way of getting horses to be ready in the spring.
We try. We're lucky enough that our gallops, manage with the weather quite well. They're chalk-based, and we get to use the grass quite a bit over here. There's no doubt that, you know, Aidan's not going to leave any stone unturned as far as these Guineas horses are concerned, and they'll be trialled at home. We obviously would have liked to take on or run in the trials, because our horses do improve for a run. But look, it's one of those. You know, he's going to be there 100%, and the majority of us in England are kind of thinking that we're going to run in the Guineas, and potentially all of ours are going to improve.
Tell me a little bit about how good you think JRB is, the horse you won the Fielden Stakes on for Brian Meehan. To the eye, it was very good. What did it feel like on top?
Look, he's a fantastic horse, brilliant mover. He gets into a nice rhythm. He'll stay a lot further, I'd imagine. Look, very impressive. I think we really liked him as a two-year-old, and he won nicely. On the July course, late on in the year, and obviously then he went to France, which I didn't think would have suited him anyway. He's just grown into himself now, and I think potentially he could be a very nice horse going forward. Stays very well. I'm just not sure what direction he's going to go in now.
We say he stays very well. He's perhaps pointed towards the Prix de Jockey Club. 10 furlongs around Chantilly. Is that what you would say would be ideal for him at this stage?
He shows pace. I'd like to see him over a mile and a half later on in the year, maybe. But at the moment, showed enough to stay at a mile and a quarter, I suppose. And you know, Brian likes to go to France, and I'd imagine like that would be a brilliant race for him, really.
So welcome back. So it is Kieran Schumach out, Charlie Post in, the man who was the toast of the Tattersalls Craven Breeze Up sale this week, because we know him for his jockey exploits. We know him for the fact that he can turn pointer-pointers into future superstars. This was something completely different, Charlie. We're going to have a look at these horses a little bit later in the show, but turning 67 grand into 800 in a few months suggests you can do the job, all right?
Yeah, as in, you could call it beginner's luck. I mean, we just were lucky that we got a fabulous horse, and us and the stars aligned with the Blue Point thing. He did an unbelievable breeze, and we had the two big players buying at the sale that both seemingly liked him. So it was, yeah, as I said to you on the night, it was stuff from dream world. We could have never imagined it would go like this.
And there's no bit of you now that watches on, say, the racing at Ayr yesterday. Fantastic racing, a lot of your old friends riding. There's no bit of you that watches that and say, oh, I wish I was doing that and not selling horses for six-figure sums.
The only thing I miss about my riding career is I still miss the competitiveness of it. I still ride out every day. I still school all the young horses. I was lucky I didn't lose my bottle for the riding, but I don't miss any of the rest of it. I don't miss getting in the bath every morning, driving around the country, and I love being involved with the young, talented athletes that we have.
We saw plenty of young, talented athletes yesterday at Ayr. Obviously, Willie Mullins, as he put it, has got one hand on the Trainers' Championship. I said, Neil Channing, it's a big old hand, isn't it?
One and a half, at least.
Yeah.
I don't know, what is he, like 1.02 to win it now or something like that? He's basically won it, hasn't he, really?
But God, didn't he chuck some... I mean, it wasn't his best ammunition, but it was a lot of ammunition he chucked at Ayr yesterday.
Like, if you...
Horses sort of you've never heard of,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, the horse, slightly, I mean, a little bit. In the Grand National itself, you're like, the Scottish National is...
Just have a look at those standings then, just to confirm them. See, look, for those people who say they're bored by the Trainers' Championship, we've been on Ayr an hour and a quarter before this graphic came up. So, you know, don't say we're not at least spreading the love evenly. Willie Mullins then, 3,082,892. He's got a nice break now on Dan Skelton, 2,903,240. I mean, it's not completely insurmountable, but... And Paul Nicholls, apparently, who's going to have loads of runners at Sandown next week, he'll need pretty much all of them, I think, to win... To be in with a fighting chance, 2,805,489. It wasn't all Mullins yesterday. For all that he had four winners at Ayr, needless to say, the only one I backed was by Alistock, who was beaten despite trading long odds on in the Scottish Champion Hurdle. And the horse that beat by Alistock was Favour and Fortune, which was rather nice to see. Not only for Alan King, who loves this meeting, but also for the Hemmings family, in whose silks that he ran, rolling back the years, and clearly a horse of some
and the Channing promise. Household. It was very popular.
So you backed this horse. Why did you back him?
Well, it's just a young improver, isn't it? I thought that would do for me. Alan King's not in terrible form. It's a good race to have a bet. I thought the favourite as well, maybe, you know, coming off a hard race.
Lotus Suit.
Yeah, so I wasn't so keen on that.
Well, you mentioned that Alan King wasn't in terrible form. I think he's in quite good form now. Morning, Alan.
Morning, Nick.
This is a nice young horse, isn't he? He's got something about him and a bit of a future. Just tell me how satisfying yesterday was for you.
Oh, very much so, because we've been not struggling, but the ground's been against him nearly all winter, you know. And he's still been running very well. He got narrowly beaten in a Grade 1 at Aintree on Boxing Day. And, you know, he ran pretty well at Cheltenham. And I've been saying all the way through, wait till you see him on better ground. And I think that was shown yesterday. And, I mean, his jumping was so much better yesterday on that ground.
And he had a view of the front in what was a slightly tactical race, a fair way out. I thought it showed... plenty for his resilience and his genuine nature that he dug it out quite so well.
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, halfway up the running, I thought I was going to get nailed. And I thought maybe it was the wrong angle, but I thought we'd actually got headed up the running and he fought back well. So, no, it was a good, tough performance from a young horse.
I was at Warwick last year when this horse won a bumper. And I remember at the time, I think talking to David Minton, obviously, who's been very closely associated with the Hemmings horses over the years, saying, oh... Kingy's quite keen to run this horse in the Cheltenham bumper, and I thought at the time that must be a measure of the raw ability that he was showing you, because I didn't think it was your normal MO.
Well, it normally isn't, and to be fair, he actually finished pretty sore after the bumper. He pulled some muscles between his front legs. So, but no, we always thought an awful lot of him, and it was great for yesterday for Catherine and Mick, you know, being great supporters.
So how do you pick your way from here on in? If he's the sort of horse who's quite contingent on at least nice ground, how does that inform what you do with him?
Well, he certainly won't run again now. I mean, we'll put him away. There was a little bit of talk, do we send them over fences? I would personally, and we spoke to Mick and Catherine yesterday, I think we'll leave him over hurdles next year. So he will be probably trained for, I would imagine, a great wood.
Mm-hmm. And then if that went well, could you see him making up into the sort of horse who is in those better conditions hurdles, you know, particularly if they're coming up light fields this side of the Irish Sea?
Well, look, we're a fair way off that at the moment, but I mean, I don't think the handicap is going to be too severe in them after that yesterday. So I think, we'll concentrate Greatwood first and see how he progresses from there.
How's the flat string shaping up, Alan?
Yeah, very well. We've got quite a few looking to come out for next week at Sandown, and a few for the Guineas meeting. Westerton's due to go there, and HMS President and Trushan, he's back in very good form. We did just tidy his soft palate up again the other day, so hopefully the Sagaro on May the 1st for him, although by that stage it'll probably be too bloody firm, you know?
ought to just maybe touch on that, because he was improved by a breathing operation last season. And when people see, wind operation, and they think it's something terribly invasive, it might just be worth explaining what that soft palate tidy up is and how quickly you can get them back after it.
Yeah, the soft palate is a pretty straightforward one, and they go in through the mouth and just sort of cauterize the soft palate. So they're basically, after that, it's 1 week sort of on the walker, and then you're back cantering. So they miss very little. And it's one of those procedures that you probably have to do more than once. You know, quite a few horses will get them done annually just to tighten up the soft palate. But it's not nearly as intrusive as a hobdy or something like that when you have to get in through the throat, you know?
Yeah, so that's the idea being that the palate tightens up so that it's not impeding the airway.
Exactly, you're tightening it up. It's like tightening up a sail on a boat or something. It's just a little procedure, and it can make an awful difference, you know?
Well, we saw last season with Trushan, if you bided your time, you know, your patience was rewarded. And I guess it's sometimes frustrating, but more often than not, it will reap a reward somewhere down the track.
Oh, for sure. You know, he's as you said, there's been a lot of times we've had him at the races and had to take him out. But I don't think if we had run him on some of those quick ground at Ascot or somewhere, we wouldn't have him now. We'll see. I mean, as I said, Sagara would be a good starting point. He's in the Yorkshire Cup. I would not, in a selfish point of view, I'd love a wet June, and I'd love to see him at least run once in the Gold Cup.
Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed for you for one deluge on the Thursday morning of Ascot, and that's it. Just going back to where we started, you were there at Ayr yesterday. I know you absolutely love this meeting. To watch Willie Mullins arrive with his battalion, I think you were one of the only people who managed to stand in his way of winning a big race. It's pretty awe-inspiring, isn't it?
It's quite unbelievable. I mean, we've been following racing for an awful long time, and I've never seen such dominance. You know, even when Henry Zassel was at his pomp, he never quite had dominated like this. And it's unbelievable what he did again yesterday, you know. And you would have to say these are his sort of second or third division horses, you know. I mean, wait to see what he brings out for Sandown and Punchestown.
And I always get the sense with you that you just think trainers here, trainers in Ireland, competitors just have to get their heads down and get on with it. It's not really a case of wailing and gnashing of teeth. We're just in the presence of one of racing's most dominant forces ever.
Yeah, and it's been building for some time, Nick. This hasn't just happened, you know. The might has been coming for the last 8-9 years, and I think we're seeing it as its might now, you know. And it's going to be there for some time, I think.
Alan, well done yesterday.
Down the flat route, you know.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well done yesterday.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Alan King, winner with the Scottish Champion with Favour and Fortune. Let's take a look at the Scottish National then. It was won by McDermott, just a lightly raced 6-year-old. Orange cap there under Danny Mullins. Dom French Davis still with me, Charlie Poe still with me. Dom, it was a good ride on a horse who's not yet the finished article.
Yeah, I didn't see the race live, but he looks an exciting young horse.
Charlie, what did you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very brave performance, wasn't it? Your kind of heart went out to Toby Laws and Kevin Brogan with Surrey Quest, because I'll be honest, when I watched it live, I thought he'd held on. But then you saw the exchange prices going up. I was at the point-to-point watching it on the phone. And, yeah, when you saw that, I think McDermott, Neil will know better than me, I think he was 1.0-something, you know, and you knew the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
And he was incredibly brave at the last. I mean, Danny Mullins, a rider full of confidence, very committed, got a crucial jump. And when you're dealing in inches, that proved pivotal.
It did. Sorry, coming all the way back in the hands of Kevin Brogan for Toby Laws. What a result that would have been for a small stable. But
yeah,
Willie Mullins, not just chucking the winner at this, but I think getting the fourth, fifth,
third,
and sixth.
Fourth and fifth or
yeah, well, Gitmaker was third, having not jumped all that well. Yeah, I mean, he'll be a nice horse next year, but it was even closer than perhaps I thought at the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was, like I say, I mean, for a small yard and a good young operator, they're the moments, aren't they, careers are made on. You know, you go and get it and you win an inch and suddenly you've got that high-profile Saturday winner and maybe it changes things. I mean, hopefully for Toby, people are just taking what it is, that Willie Mullins doing what Willie Mullins does, and he doesn't really care about reputations or what would be nice. He just wants winners and more of them.
Yeah, and Patrick Mullins, I remember at the beginning of the season, said something along the lines of, you ain't seen nothing yet. You know, it was more stylish than that, but it was along those lines of, hang on a minute, you thought last year was good, we're about to unleash hell. And at Christmas, you're thinking, are they? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and how?
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, I just marvel at the whole... You know, it's like a multinational company and they've spent years building up to this. But it's the supply, isn't it? Like most of these very good ones, they're not on the open market. It's not that you're saying, well, people haven't gone the sales and been ballsy enough to go bore them out. They're picking them up before anyone else seemingly gets a chance. So, you know, you have to look at Harold Kirk and Pierre Boulard, the guys in France, you know, the people that are networking and sourcing the material. And of course, therefore, if Cheltenham is your mecca, which it is for so many big money people, you're going to go to Willie Mullins, aren't you? And therefore, the money is there as well, that he can buy these horses on spec. And the one thing I marvel at is how he manages to keep everyone...
Happy?
Happy. Mm. You know, how do you say, well, sorry, you didn't get a shot at El Fabiolo because Simon Meunier and Isaac Swade have had him, but, you know, and then... One of the others comes along and State Man. Well, that's what I think must be an unbelievable balancing act.
Well, two things I've really enjoyed about this season from his point of view is the Dublin Racing Festival, 8 Grade 1 winners for 7 different owners. I'm thinking, that is genius. And then this week, just the level of application to winning this title race. You know, okay, we've waited, half thinking at Cheltenham it might be possible, get through the Grand National and bang, and in they come, and there's Ludlow and there's Foss Lass and there's this, that and the other, and it's like all these brains going into it, Patrick and Ruby and Casey and all the others. It's quite phenomenal.
Yeah, you'd love the idea that there's a Zoom call after entry and it's like, it's on now, right? How many can we enter and what can we enter? You know, what can we draft in for the Scottish National? Because like you say, it's the thinking to not just win the race, to pick up all the place money as well. I mean, he's just making sure it's inevitable he's going to win it. And again, you've got to marvel at that competitive desire.
Yeah, and against two absolutely fierce competitors as well. Mm. We know how good Paul Nicholls is at winning this championship 14 times, and Skelton's had an amazing season. How brilliant he's been in getting horses targeted for handicaps. The winning owner yesterday was another relatively different name on the Mullins roll of honour to what we've seen this season. Pat Gallagher, whose colours have been so familiar for a number of years, spoke to Pat on Friday, looking forward to going up to air. I bet the trip back was fun, Pat, wasn't it?
It sure was, Nick, yeah. Yeah, thank God there wasn't a bar on the small plane we were in.
Otherwise, it would have been fairly dry. Just tell us about the whole day for you and your team who went up with you.
I went up with my two sons, Richard and Stephen, and we flew up from Fair Oaks in a small plane we hired. And to be honest with you, I had two or three Coca-Colas before the race. I didn't even have a penny on them. I'm a bloody superstitious, I suppose. And, oh, my God, jumping the second last, I looked up at the skies and I thought, Mary, if you're in heaven, please, we need this one. And my late wife, Mary. And thank God, as I say, won it by a nostril, Nick. It was the shortest you could ever win anything by, but I was so delighted for Danny because the horse has fallen a couple of times with poor Danny on him, and it was great to see him staying with the horse and winning the race. And Danny, of course, for Willie and the championship and everything.
I'll talk about Willie and Danny and the championship and the horse in a minute. Tell me a little bit about Mary, Pat.
Mary, my wife, my late wife, she passed away 4 years ago, just over 4 years ago. She loved her racing. she loved her racing. We'd go racing, and like all Irishmen, I'd go in the gate and say, there's a couple of £100 for you to have a bet. She'd walk out with a wad full of cash, and I'd walk out with empty pockets. She could do all these complicated bets and everything, and she loved her racing, and I got a horse called Ballybay, which is named after where she come from in Ireland, Ballybay in County Monaghan. But as I say, she loved her racing, and every day it was the racing post. And back in the days of Pat Hedley, every time he'd have a winner, I'd get a phone call. Pat's had another winner. We were great friends with Pat and Caroline, and then of course Shane Kelly, and a young man from beside me back in Ireland. When Shane would have a winner, or every day, I wouldn't read the bloody paper. I wouldn't have time. She'd read it and tell me what was going on. Yeah, oh, it was lovely.
Wonderful that McDermott could do it for you and for her and for your memories of your great times racing together. Of course, the headline was what McDermott could do for Willie Mullins yesterday. How pleased are you to be part of that story, Pat?
Oh, hugely, because, Nick, as you well know, I've had horses for nearly 30 years. And, I mean, to be part of something like that is so, so special. And to be part of it with Willie, because, like I told you the other day, Willie had come up to our box. You know, he was asking me, oh, Pat, would you have a horse? There was none of that. Willie doesn't need to, you know. And just to say to him, Willie, if you find that special one and you buy it, stick my name against it. And, you know, that's how it happened. And yesterday I went up to a box with Willie. We watched the previous race, walked down, and coming down the stairs, I just said, Willie, have we a chance in this? He said, yeah, we have a good chance. And that was it. You know, I don't go pressurising any of the lads of horses with Gary Moore, you know, the Moore family, any of them. Look, the horse will do it on the day if he's good enough, if the race is right. And hope to God we get our few winners in the season and celebrate it. To me, it's a sport, it's the people, it's everything.
And, of course, you can dream next year, Pat, about winding your way to Aintree somehow. It sounds as though that'll be the primary target.
That'll be, you know, again, Willie said that yesterday in his interview. To be honest with you, if I get through the next couple of days, as I say, because I've been for the last 2 hours writing messages back to people, you know, it'll take me half the day today, you know, all the messages that's on my phone from people, some I haven't spoken to for years, and it's just lovely. And of course, I have friends in America that was watching in Everton, and our local town back in Ireland, Banlamore, they tell me there was a queue of people at the betting shop there, you know. It's great. These things only ever happen to you a few times in your life, if you're very lucky.
Pat, I know you don't need to be reminded to cherish this, but cherish this, and I'll let you go back to answering all the well wishes. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Nick. Always great to talk to you. Bye now. Bye.
Pat Gallagher, the delighted winning owner of McDermott yesterday, the man who rode McDermott to success. Danny Mullins is with me now. Danny, good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
This plan, this trainer's championship plan for Willie and Co. is being executed pretty brilliantly, isn't it?
It's starting to come together quite well now. You know, yesterday was quite an influential day, but, you know, going into yesterday, Skelton's had a great day on the Friday in Ayr, and it was still very much in the balance. So, excuse me, hopefully with this week, a few more runners, we can put a seal on it. But it's far from done just yet.
Yeah, I like the idea. We were talking earlier on, Charlie and Dom and I and Neil, we were talking about the level of kind of 11th hour planning, really, that's had to go into getting a lot of horses across the sea and in the right races and identifying where the prize money is. To what extent has it been a big team think?
You know, everybody's playing their role, and I suppose that's why Willie's operation is operating on the level that it is, you know, from the very top all the way down. You know, everybody knows what they're doing, and I suppose David Casey was under the most pressure this week to make all the entries, get the horses in. And then after that, we were just hoping we could make it happen. You know, the lads travelled over with the horses. They were all happy, and thankfully we got some results yesterday.
I know David Casey's name gets mentioned a lot as a huge part of this operation, but he is an incredible man, isn't he? The way he can keep that many plates spinning at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's not an easy job, and you know he puts it all together well, and puts all of us in a position where it makes it a little bit easier for us to do what we need to do.
The market didn't really tell the story of McDermott yesterday. Yeah, he was very well fancied earlier in the week, and then Paul jumped on another one, and suddenly everybody seemed to think that he wasn't really fancied, and he went off 18-1. Were you always of the mindset that he was one of the obvious ones?
Definitely so. You know, I seen Paul ride and work during the week, and I was hoping I'd be on him. So I was asking Paul what he thought afterwards, and Paul was quite impressed with how he worked. And I was just delighted that Spanish Harlem maybe worked a little bit better. And when he was maybe a 20-1 shot, when McDermott was 6-1 early in the week, that probably flicked the market in the favour of some others. But, you know, it didn't mean there was anything wrong with my fella. And, you know, he came out and delivered on the day.
When you flashed past the post, what were you thinking? Did you think you'd done it?
A deeper gut feeling was hopeful that we'd won. But, you know, I'm around long enough now. Anytime I'm in a head bobbing finish, I just keep telling myself I'm beat. And the ITV camera stayed with me trotting back across. So I was thinking that's a bit of a positive. And when I got back, there was nobody running at me, cheering or looking happy. So I was thinking, oh, what's going on here? And I asked someone who's won. They said, I don't know. So that was another positive that I hadn't been beat yet anyway. So it was a long little wait. Those 20 seconds can feel like 5 minutes.
And he's a nice, sort of quite old-fashioned work in progress, this horse, isn't he? Bit different to what we've seen from, you know, the modern day stars, if you like.
That's it. And you know, he's probably didn't achieve much in his bumper days. He's hurdling, you know, got the job done, won a maiden hurdle, but wasn't a superstar in any shape or form. And you know, since I'd ridden him in Limerick over 2 miles, and I just felt that day the change of pace probably took him off his feet, and spoke to Willie afterwards about stepping up, and that worked out well in Fairy House. He's gone from 2 miles to 3 miles and then up to 4 to win yesterday. So I think the stamina has really brought out the best in him. But if you watch him walking around the parade ring yesterday, he's got a deep girth on him. You think he's, to the untrained eye, you'd say he's nearly fat still. He's just got such depth to him, but there's an engine within that.
Oh my God, he's going to be deadly when he gets him fit.
Who knows where the roof will be?
Right. Are you going to be making any more trips over here this week, or is it all Paul?
Hopefully we can keep Paul battling away for his championship in Ireland.
Yes, of course.
Jack Kendi are locking horns there, so with a bit of luck, I'll be able to make a few trips over. I think Patrick is going on Monday, and then we've horses in Sandown and Perth after that. So I'd imagine Paul will be making a trip to Sandown, all right. I don't think we've Irish racing on Saturday, but I'd like to try and get up to Perth if there was runners going up there, but that'll be left to the team at home to decide who's been deployed where.
Oh, it's been hugely enjoyable to watch this, and there was some great sport yesterday, Danny. Thanks for playing such a huge part in it and for chatting to us this morning.
Thanks a million, Nick.